The world and everything in it is supported today by ChristianBook.com, your online resource for everything Christian. On the web at ChristianBook.com.
Today is Thursday, December 22nd, 2016, and you're listening to The World and Everything in It from member-supported World Radio. Good morning, I'm Kent Covington. And I'm Joseph Slive. Ahead today, the attempted intimidation of some members of the Electoral College, plus a retelling of the greatest story ever told.
Even now, life held heavy inside the body of his espoused wife. He must find a place for her to rest. Bethlehem will be filled with those making the journey. What if there was no shelter to be found?
Up first, Mary Reichert has a summary of today's top news stories.
The hunt continues for a man suspected in Monday's terrorist attack in Berlin, Germany, that killed 12 and wounded nearly 50. Law enforcement officials are casting a net across Europe in hopes of catching the Tunisian-born Anis Amri, who German police said had ties to Islamic militants. Ralf Jaeger is the interior minister for Germany's North Rhine-Westphalia state, where the suspect was living. He says 23-year-old Amri, an asylum seeker, was on their radar as far back as June when they tried and failed to deport him.
Although he was living in Berlin, The deportation was coordinated with the immigration services in Kleve, but he could not be deported because he did not have any valid identity papers. Tunisia initially denied that he was a citizen of Tunisia.
Officials believe Amri was responsible for, or at least involved in, the truck attack that rammed into a crowd of holiday shoppers. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. Meanwhile, Germans and refugees gathered near the site of the massacre, singing Silent Night in honor of the victims and their families. In Mexico, officials are still searching for the cause of a series of massive explosions at a fireworks market yesterday. Hundreds of shoppers had crowded the market on the northern outskirts of Mexico City to purchase fireworks for the holidays when the chain reaction of explosions began. Video shows clouds of thick smoke billowing from the site. Federico Juarez was at the market during the attack and describes, through a translator, people being knocked off their feet.
We were in the area of the bathrooms when there was an explosion at the shop at the end of the row, and then a series of blasts came one after the other, and people started to fall down a lot. They started running, and then many people were falling, and pieces of concrete and bricks started falling all over the street.
Another set of explosions hit that same market in 2005, but this is the first one that turned deadly. More than 30 people have died so far and more than 70 injured, many of them children. Some 3,000 Syrians are without food or warmth in below-freezing temperatures in Aleppo. 60 buses evacuating people from the besieged city have been halted at checkpoints for more than 2 days for reasons still unknown. The evacuees are not allowed to leave the buses, and several people have already died in the cold. Meanwhile, a 7-year-old Syrian girl who tweeted about her life in war-torn East Aleppo is among those who have made it to safety. World Radio's Kristen Eicher has more.
Bana Alibed got a chance to thank Turkish President Recep Erdogan in person after he sent a helicopter to Aleppo to carry Bana and her family to Turkey.
I would like to thank you for supporting the children of Aleppo and help us to get out from war.
Bana's Twitter account, managed by her mother Fatima, brought light to the plight of children living amid violence in the country, publishing tweets pleading for help and posting pictures of her home after it was bombed. It's unclear how long Bana and her family will stay in Turkey. I'm Kristen Eicher.
North Carolina state legislators argued into the night on Thursday over a proposed repeal of the state's so-called bathroom bill. They finally voted to adjourn without repealing the law, which requires people in government buildings to use public restrooms according to the sex listed on their birth certificates. The law passed in response to the city of Charlotte's unprecedented ordinance allowing public bathroom use based on gender identity. Keeping that law in place scuttles a political bargain between outgoing Governor Pat McCrory and the city of Charlotte.
The deal was simple. Charlotte repeals its ordinance, and we fully repeal HB2 without any strings.
State Rep. Jeff Jackson. Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts refused to make that deal until a Democrat won the governorship. McCrory said the about-face speaks volumes.
You know, the sudden reversal with little notice after the gubernatorial election has ended sadly proves this entire issue, originated by the political left, was all about politics.
One Republican lawmaker proposed a six-month cooling-off period to prevent other towns from repeating Charlotte's provocation along with HB2's repeal, but Democrat lawmakers refused. President Obama used his executive power this week to ban oil drilling in parts of the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans. A 1953 law that allows the president to ban offshore drilling leases leads the White House to believe any legal challenge can be withstood. And President Obama is hopeful that it will be difficult for President-elect Trump to reverse the ban. The president cited protection of vulnerable ecosystems and native Alaskan subsistence living as reasons for the ban. Existing oil leases are not affected by the order. Environmentalists are cheering the move, but critics say it puts the U.S. back on the path to energy dependence. Abortion giant Planned Parenthood will no longer receive Texas taxpayer dollars. Sarah Waddell has the details.
Texas officials gave Planned Parenthood its taxpayer dollar eviction notice on Tuesday. The nation's largest abortion business will be kicked out of the state's taxpayer-funded Medicaid program in 30 days. Texas Medicaid currently hands Planned Parenthood over $3 million a year. Officials said the move comes after undercover videos released last year revealed Planned Parenthood's potentially illegal sale of aborted baby parts, which officials pointed to as a clear violation of Medicaid guidelines. Planned Parenthood denies the claims and says the group will turn to the courts to block the defunding measure. I'm Sarah Waddell.
And I'm Mary Reichard. Straight ahead, the Justice Department turns a blind eye to elector intimidation. Plus, the biggest news story of all time. This is The World and Everything in It.
All news is God's news. We believe that because this is our Father's world, and though the wrong seems oft so strong, God is the ruler yet. God works in and through the circumstances of our lives and throughout the entire world to accomplish His perfect purposes. Even the bad news, God turns to good, so we report it all. You help us do that by supporting this program and telling your friends about it. Thanks for supporting us this year.
You're listening to The World and Everything in It. I'm Kent Covington. With Donald J. Trump set to be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States next month, politicians and pundits have moved past the unprecedented push to unelect Mr. Trump in Monday's Electoral College vote. That effort saw Hollywood's elite making video pleas to Republican electors to change their votes and demonstrators in state capitals all across the country. But it led to something else that's been all too quickly forgotten: actual intimidation of Republican electors. World Radio's Jim Henry has more.
The left-wing effort to prevent electors from voting for Donald Trump reached levels of hysteria Monday at Wisconsin's State House in Madison. That woman had to be forcefully removed before the electoral votes could be counted, and once they were, chaos again broke out.
The votes are 10 votes, Donald J. Trump.
The day after the general election last month, Hillary Clinton gave a gracious concession speech and urged her supporters to give President-elect Trump a chance. But within days, that message changed dramatically as Democrats began encouraging an Electoral College revolt to deny Donald Trump the presidency. Acting chair of the DNC, Donna Brazile, on Russian hacking.
The election was tainted by this intrusion.
Colorado Democratic elector Polly Baca went a step further, leading a failed movement to get Republican electors to vote for anyone but Donald Trump.
It's a matter of following our Constitution and voting for a president who does not have obligations or is not influenced by foreign powers.
And, of course, Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta on NBC refusing to say the election was free and fair.
The question is whether there are 37 Republican electors who think that either there are open questions or that Donald Trump, based on everything we know about him, is really unfit to be president of the United States.
While no one is suggesting that the Clinton campaign or the Democratic Party were behind the reported attempts to intimidate Republican electors, neither did they condemn it. That's unacceptable to Trump transition team spokesman Sean Spicer.
I'm appalled that there's so little outrage at what's going on. The intimidation that they have cast on people who constitutionally are there to cast the votes that are part of this process is unbelievable.
In Arizona, Republican elector Robert Graham says the intimidation wasn't limited to nasty letters and emails.
One day I had a couple of emails from the same person that said that they were going to follow me and they were going to make us very uncomfortable because they knew where we lived. And the next day on the freeway, I was actually looked to my right and I see people following me actually with their phone up against the window videoing. They slowed down behind. They got in front of my car. When I was at a traffic light, they were taking pictures. Mm. And that happened 2 days in a row in two different people, but again, slowly passing in front of our house, same car, same people.
As chairman of the Arizona Republican Party, Graham says he's used to being in the public eye, but many of the Republican electors were frightened by the experience.
We have one lady that's on our electoral college who received 100,000 emails in one day, her phone locked up, her home computer. She had to bring in help to just clear it out so she could actually function day to day on a normal basis.
And Graham says he's disappointed that neither President Obama or Hillary Clinton spoke out against the attempts to intimidate Republican electors. In Michigan, Republican elector Michael Benarian says left-wing groups publicized the names and addresses of his colleagues.
We had groups that were compiling all of our information and blasting it out to their members and telling them to essentially harass us.
Benarian says that's when the intimidation really started.
I've just been inundated with thousands and thousands of letters to my house, emails, Facebook messages, and some of those messages, unfortunately, were death threats. And I've had people that have been talking about putting a bullet in the back of my mouth, burning myself and my family, sending pictures of nooses saying that if I don't do the right thing and vote for Hillary Clinton, they'll get me. Just some really uncalled for rhetoric from the left just because Donald Trump won the election.
Former Justice Department attorney and now head of the Election Law Center, J. Christian Adams, has another term for elector intimidation.
It's political terrorism. There are multiple federal statutes do not allow you to give death threats to electors. But understand, this is a larger effort to destabilize the system, destabilize the Electoral College. There are people out there that spend millions of dollars trying to destabilize the Electoral College. And these threats are a part of it because it tries to alter the outcome of the election.
Adams says if conservative groups had tried to intimidate Democratic electors, the Obama Justice Department would be all over it, and rightly so.
They're not there because of the fact that the electors were going to vote for Trump. That's the reason that they're not doing anything. That's how this Justice Department plays. If you are against them, they don't help you. There are federal statutes exactly on point. You cannot send threats by interstate communications to kill people, especially if they're electors. It's a federal crime. The FBI hasn't even called the electors to ask them what happened.
But Adams hopes that will change with a new administration and a Justice Department under Attorney General designate Jeff Sessions.
On January 21st, the FBI can pay a visit to these electors still and show that times have changed, that the rule of law is back, and you can't threaten the constitutional order by threatening electors.
Reporting for World Radio, I'm Jim Henry.
You're busy and on the move. Time's short, but you want to stay in touch with the news that matters most. You need clarity that's instant and easy to get to. you also want to share big ideas and updates in real time with others. Stories you know will make a difference in their lives. That's what World Digital does best. Get you the story instantly and makes it easily shareable with others. World Digital, your fast lane for staying informed about the truly important news of the day on Twitter, Facebook, or WNG.org.
Thank you so much for joining us today for The World and Everything in It from World Radio. Next, the greatest story ever told. Someone once said that the incarnation, God becoming man in Jesus Christ, is the most stupendous fact in all of history, telling us more about the heart of God than anything else. The incarnation, of course, is what the Christmas story is all about. Today and tomorrow, we're presenting what has become an annual tradition on this program, a retelling of the Nativity story, as narrated by the late John Facenda. Mr. Facenda was a newscaster and TV host in Philadelphia for many decades. He also was known nationally for his work as the narrator for NFL films from the mid-1960s until his death in 1984. Here is John Facenda's retelling of the story of the Nativity, a story that begins centuries before the birth of the Christ child.
The arrival of the Messiah was foretold in prophecies. Prophecies that have withstood the ravages of history and clearly indicate to us today that the birth of Christ was no accident, but part of a master plan. The prophecies are quite explicit as to time and place and circumstance, and the words where the trumpet sounds to herald the arrival of the new king. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not near. A star shall rise out of Jacob, and a scepter shall spring up from Israel. Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. For behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel. And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of thee shall come a king that shall rule my people. And his going forth is from the beginning, from the days of eternity. Nestled in the hills of Galilee, looking out over a small, contented valley of the Holy Land, lies the village of Nazareth, a village marked with renown by both prophecy and history. For here live a man and woman chosen by divine command to give the world the Prince of Peace. Few knew of this sacred secret carried by this couple, Joseph and Mary. Though all hoped that it would come to pass, none dared believe that it could be expressed in the union of a lowly carpenter and his espoused wife. How could they know that an angel of the Lord had spoken to this maid, humble and sincere, holy and saintly, with a word that would set her apart from all other women? Joseph knew all these things and more. His was the role of protector and provider. His the awesome responsibility of being husband and father, and at the same time, not being either. Little else is known about this worker of Nazareth, but so much may be correctly assumed concerning him. He had to be a man of understanding, and he was. Gentle, kind, considerate. God's eternal choice of him would seek to imply those qualities, as well as his sanctity. The carpenter was a good and holy man. This we know along with one other thing. He was from the house of David, and this proud fact was soon to cause Joseph great concern. Soon he would have to leave his modest dwelling in Nazareth and journey with Mary, who was with child, to Bethlehem, the city of David, some 80 miles distant. Why so long a journey at this critical time in Mary's condition? Joseph, who obeyed every divine wish, was now to comply with a civil command. the decree from Caesar Augustus that all should be enrolled. Since all Judea at the time was under the jurisdiction of Rome, there was nothing for Joseph and Mary to do but register according to the law. A law that required each inhabitant to return to the place from which his family came and there be counted for the purpose of taxation. And so it began a long time ago, that journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Three souls, Joseph, Mary, and her soon-to-be infant son, Jesus, and a donkey. Joseph was rich in blessings, but among them was not the blessing of wealth. Fortunate was he that he could borrow the use of this tiny animal for Mary to ride. How many times must this thought have crossed his troubled mind as finally they left the plains of Esdraelon behind and moved into the shadow of Mount Tabor, into Samaria, and at last, Judea. Even now, life held heavy inside the body of his espoused wife. He must find a place for her to rest. Bethlehem will be filled with those making the journey just like he was. What if there was no shelter to be found? Joseph ignored that thought, but not the sight of the silhouetted families around small campfires beside the road. They too were people, like themselves, who had come for the census. And even now he hears the scattered sounds that tell him that they soon will be there. He halts the donkey and turns as if to speak to Mary. But instead, he smooths the shawl around her yet a little closer. He clasps her hand and she turns her eyes toward him, eyes which hold a gentle entreaty. Hurry, Joseph, hurry. Wind whips at the little family as they enter the gates of Bethlehem. All around them are the signs of a busy, overcrowded town. And though it's after dark, the streets pulsate with the noise of life. Roman soldiers walk in groups, their strange ways and language mingling with the cries and the sounds of the beggars and peddlers. Bethlehem this night will bring little rest to people crowded within its walls. Joseph tightens his grasp of the rein and moves closer to Mary's side as they guide themselves through the maze of people down the narrow streets. Streets that seem strange to Joseph, yet he knew them, for his last visit was not that long ago. He did remember, for there is the courtyard that leads to the inn. His steps quicken as they pace those of the tired animal. Here will they find rest. Here renew their strength, renew their spirits for that which is to come. Everything will be all right now that they are at the inn.
The late John Facenda with the first of his two-part retelling of the Nativity story. We'll present part two tomorrow.
If you're a Christian parent or grandparent and you're looking for a Christmas gift that can make a real difference this year, then pay close attention to this important message. It's now possible to give a fun and entertaining gift that teaches character and Christian values to kids. These award-winning audio adventures unlock your child's natural ability to learn faster, increase attention span, even get better grades. Go to FamilyAudioAdventures.com. That's FamilyAudioAdventures.com. Use coupon code 34 and get half off. FamilyAudioAdventures.com.
Thanks for listening to The World and Everything in It from World Radio. While America and much of the world are focusing attention on the coming of a new president, commentator Cal Thomas says not enough attention is being paid to a gift not even the world's richest person could pay for.
2017 marks the 500th anniversary of the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. A look back at one of the greatest sermons ever preached about Christmas by the man credited with splitting Christianity from the dominant Roman Catholic Church seems appropriate. Martin Luther's understanding of what we euphemistically call the real meaning of Christmas was absolute. Luther noted the humble backgrounds of Mary and Joseph, and how rich travelers stayed in far better surroundings than the stable the two who would become the world's most famous couple were forced to occupy. Luther commented, quote, "See, this is the first picture with which Christ puts the world to shame and exposes all it does and knows. It shows that the world's greatest wisdom is foolishness. Her best actions are wrong, and her greatest treasures are misfortunes," unquote. Well, such a notion should humble a politician, even a president, if that were possible. And yet, too many among us put more faith in princes and kings, in the false hope he or she can deliver us, instead of the one who really can. Luther strips away any notion of dignity or honor, noting that Mary and Joseph, quote, "had neither money nor influence to secure a room in the inn. Hence, they were obliged to lodge in a stable. O world, how stupid! O man, how blind thou art! But the birth itself is still more pitiful. There was no one to take pity on this young wife who was for the first time to give birth to a child, no one to take to heart her condition, that she, a stranger, did not have the least thing a mother needs in a birth night. There she is without any preparation, without either light or fire, alone in the darkness, without anyone offering her service as is customary for women to do at such times," unquote. In the polar opposite of what humankind longs for in fame, riches, and honor, Luther speaks of the lowly shepherds who were the first told of this unique birth. "Behold how very richly God honors those who are despised of men, and that very gladly. Here you see that his eyes look into the depths of humility. As is written, he sitteth above the cherubim and looketh into the depths. Nor could the angels find princes or valiant men to whom to communicate the good news, but only unlearned laymen, the most humble people upon earth. Could they not have addressed the high priests who, it was supposed, knew so much concerning God and the angels? No, God chose poor shepherds who, though they were of low esteem in the sight of men, were in heaven regarded as worthy of such great grace and honor," unquote. Well, next month, we will inaugurate another U.S. president. Pomp, ceremony, and considerable ego will be on display. 2,000 years ago, there was another inauguration of sorts, one whose goal is out of reach of the smartest political leader. That one had, and has, the power to transform lives and fit them for another world. It is a world according to the baby born in Bethlehem of Judea, who became a man and savior to billions worldwide, will, unlike this world and the little it offers, never pass away. For the world and everything in it, I'm Cal Thomas.
Columnist and commentator Cal Thomas is the author of What Works? Common Sense Solutions for a Stronger America. We're so glad you could join us today. That's our program for Thursday, December 22nd. Thanks for listening. The World and Everything in It comes to you from World Radio, part of World, a member-supported nonprofit news team committed to honest reporting from a biblical worldview perspective. Thanks for being a World member. You make this program possible. Tell your friends about our complimentary 3-month trial membership. It'll give them full access to this program, along with the World website and World in print, all at no charge. Tell them to go to GetWorldNow.com. GetWorldNow.com. I'm Kent Covington. And I'm Joseph Slive. On tomorrow's program, John Stone Street and Nick Eicher talk about some of the big cultural stories of 2016. Plus, part 2 of the Nativity story. We hope you can join us for The World and Everything in It.